Good morning, and welcome to WDRT's Conversations. My name is Dina Eccles, and my guest today by telephone is Tracy Littlejohn. I met Tracy years ago through an educational event in La Crosse called Widening the Circle. We then worked together on the board of the Wisconsin Network for Peace and Justice. Her life story demonstrates her passion to help her people, the Ho-Chunk, and all Indigenous peoples, and we'll be talking about her efforts during this show. She's someone who lives her truth, and I'm very happy to have her in conversation this morning. Thanks, Tracy, for joining me.
No problem.
Well, we kind of ran into each other at the at La Crosse's Indigenous Day celebration last week.
Yes.
How does that feel to be finally having some recognition on that day?
It felt really good, particularly because the City of La Crosse's Park and Recs Department came to us to ask for help to put this together. They paid for everything. They did a lot of stuff in kind, letting us use the park. We were basically just to kind of give them the idea and make some contacts for them.
Mm, I didn't know that. That makes it even kind of sweeter there.
Yeah.
To have that welcome.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'd like to begin with your life as a Ho-Chunk and how it shaped you and how you see it.
Well, you know, when I was really young, like early elementary, I knew I was unique in the fact that I was Native, but I didn't quite comprehend the breadth of that. And as I got older into my teens, and my parents did a great job at helping me understand racism and discrimination. And so as a teenager, well, I'd say actually middle school, I actually started to experience that in a way that I realized it was racist. And we had lived in Texas for a little bit, and we moved back here when I started middle school. And that was when I really wanted to learn more about who I was as a Ho-Chunk.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad did a pretty good job of that. He also made sure that I was around other Ho-Chunks, even though we lived in La Crosse and we didn't live, you know, in one of the established communities like Black River Falls or Tolma. He made sure that I still had those connections. And I just kept on wanting to learn more about it. And I ended up working for the tribe in many different capacities, and just out of my own wanting to learn things, I have been able to become involved in lots of different areas of activism, and I see it all as helping not only myself but other Native people and our children and grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And forward from there.
Yeah, and really everyone. You know, I know the work that you've done and, you know, that I've been able to see and participated in has helped me. You know, it's like I don't think it's very hard. If, you know, that racism thing has, it stings both ways, you know.
Yeah.
It's really a hard thing to carry. So you've found this, and it's clearly it clearly feeds you. You know, and you do it a lot. So talk about some of those roles that you've taken on with the Ho-Chunk and things that you learned and how you're carrying the ball forward, so to speak.
Right. So my initial position was as a secretary for our health department at the local office in La Crosse, then on to our branch office, which is under administration. Since then, I've been in the Office of the President as Public Relations, which helped me understand that there's a lot to know to be able to just be able to represent us in a positive manner. I've been in the Business Department, so I understand, you know, the whole enterprise and gaming side. I've been in the Legislative Office. One of my favorite jobs was in Cultural Resources, where it's my job to actually learn more about our culture.
That's
so
beautiful.
You can't really be more perfect of a job for someone wanting to learn more.
Right.
And I've been in the Social Services Department for a while now, working in youth services, where I get to work with kids, and particularly in La Crosse, where it's even a little bit harder than when I was a kid to have those connections with other Ho-Chunk people, just to help them with their identity and knowing what it means to be Ho-Chunk and, mm-hmm. and learning some of the things that they may not have grown up with because of the assimilation right. that's been happening.
So that's what makes it harder, the assimilation.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So widening the circle, when yeah. that's when I believe we first met. talk about that and the importance of that as far as the educational programs, you know, that are involved.
Well, I was still an undergrad at UW-La Crosse almost 20 years ago. I started late. I didn't start till I was 26. But it actually started, it's a really cute story. Myself and some other Native students and some Hmong students were walking on campus, and it was dark out, and somebody, one of the other Native people, whistled. And I kind of just, like, reached over and smacked him in the arm, not hard. And he went, "Oh, sorry, forgot." And one of our Hmong friends said, "What'd you do that for?" I said, "We're not supposed to whistle at night." And she said, "Oh, neither are we."
Wow.
And we started to realize, like, these similarities that we have between our two cultures.
Uh-huh.
And so we started hanging out more. We attended the Wisconsin Indian Education Association annual meeting that year and had found out that the Act 31 regarding education in K through 12 for Indian education
mm-hmm.
Was very, very poorly being implemented across the state.
Wait, let's explain that a little bit more.
Okay.
What it was hoping to do.
Yeah. Well, Act 31 wants education curriculum to consist of knowing the federally recognized and the non-federally recognized tribes in Wisconsin, their history, the treaties, and some of the contemporary issues that are going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from 1990, 1991, mm-hmm. biennial budget. But a lot of school districts did not implement it or did not know how to implement it, according to the survey that we had seen from mm-hmm. the year 2000. And that's when we were kind of just having these conversations. We're like, why is it so hard for them to implement it? And then when we looked at more of like just some of the notes and comments from people, it was, I don't know where to find this information.
Wow.
So we, for a few years, had this conference called the Act 31 Conference, where we were, like, teaching teachers how to teach Act 31. And we accessed people we knew from across the state and different aspects of it, and it was doing really well, and it was targeted towards teachers. Well, then with that whole idea of us friends that saw the similarities, we also started talking about cultural survival.
Mm-hmm.
And what that did is it grew, and we realized, you know what, our Hmong students are suffering in the same manner
mm-hmm.
as our Native students, because people weren't learning about the Hmong people, and there was a higher population of them in La Crosse than there were Native people. And so we created, it morphed into the Widening the Circle Indigenous Education Conference. We ranged in things from such as, you know, curriculum to intergenerational trauma to language preservation, spirituality, all kinds of different topics throughout the years. We went online during the pandemic. We did some virtual speakers. And, you know, we're kind of left this year alone, and we're looking at how are we going to revive this? How do we make sure it continues on and being effective in reaching out to educators, administration, other people to make sure that the Native and the Hmong communities are being represented everywhere and they're being encouraged to maintain their individuality as different tribal peoples.
Right. And I'm sure there may be some people listening to this and saying, well, what is cultural survival? Why is that important?
Well, it really is at the root of who we are, and there were so many attempts by the United States government to take that from us.
Right.
And it is just so important to our identity. I mean, being Ho-Chunk is not a race thing. It's not a biological thing. It is us as a people, much like being German or being Irish, being Italian, you know, being Chinese. It's that culture that belongs to us. But because it was, you know, it was policy, basically,
yeah, it was
to
outlawed.
Remove it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need to make sure we can hold on to what we have left and nurture it so that it continues forward so that there are still Ho-Chunk people in the future.
Mm-hmm. Right, and you've done a really great job with that. In the 20 years that I've lived here in Wisconsin, I'm learning and meeting more and more Ho-Chunk, and I've had a few actually on these calls, and how precious that learning is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's because we need to learn from one another. We need to learn your ties to this land and how the significance that it holds for you, and how you treat it, how you the respect that you have. That's something that's been lost by so many of us.
Yeah.
You know, everybody, most everybody who's here has been uprooted from their homelands. And a lot of that is lost. A lot of that feeling of the connection to the land is lost. So personally, I try as much as I can to spend time and learn from people like yourself, you know, to help me remember as I care for the land. You know, what does it mean for me?
Mm-hmm.
So I really, I'm always grateful to be your neighbor, so to speak, you know, so that I found myself here.
Yeah, and I feel extremely grateful that my ancestors found a way for us to remain in our homeland.
Mm-hmm.
I know so many do not have that, whether they are Native American, First Nations, all of the different indigenous groups that have been removed, and even people who came here, whether it was by choice or, you know, under duress, whatever it may be, are not living in their ancestral home, but I get to.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an amazing thing for me.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's totally precious. I believe that. I mean, I learned a lot from my grandmother, who, under duress, left Italy at 16, came to this country. And she, you know, they had lived off the land there.
Yes.
And somehow she had to manage to do that here. And I learned from her. Those first 6 years of my life, we ate straight from the garden, and there was a preciousness to that. And I think that's been one of the things that called me back to the land, even though it's not the land that I grew up in. But there's that relationship, I think, that we all need to have with the earth. So again, I think it's wonderful, and I hope people take more time to understand, to see and witness the relationship that Ho-Chunk people have. People of the big voice, right?
Yes, that's who we are. And I try to use my voice the best I can.
Yeah, you do. Good job. Wow. So what's the next step then for widening the circle, you think?
We're not sure yet. We just kind of started talking about which direction do we want to go, because we've changed the format several times trying to find what was the best way, the most effective way to get this information out and have the impact on our youth that we wanted to. So right now we're kind of just reconsidering what that's going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've been doing this for myself and one of the other founders, we've been doing this for about 20 years.
Wow.
We're looking at some of the younger people who have been with us for a little bit, for their fresh ideas and their insights onto, you know, what platforms would be best, what formats work best, and what their experiences have been in schools, so that it maybe the needs are different now.
How so?
Well, my hope is that they are learning these things in school, so it's we can get past just the basics and look at things that are a little bit more beneficial for all of the students, such as, you know, can we look at some indigenous learning? Can we use, you know, indigenous knowledge in chemistry, in math, astronomy, more than just learning history and treaties?
Right. No, this is good. I just listened to a TED Talk by Lila June. I don't know if you're familiar with her. Yeah, I had met her at Standing Rock, and now she has her doctorate in environmental studies, and she did that. She researched, and it was great. It's a great TED Talk. It just came out, by the way. And yes, I think it's more. I think it's critically important that be what's being taught. And I was really impressed by the kids that I met on Indigenous Day, both the Hmong and the Ho-Chunk children. Kids that were there.
Good.
Yeah, they were very, you know, I always like meeting the kids, because they've learned, you know, they'll look you in the eye, they'll talk to you, it's a cultural respect, you know, and their willingness to share and their excitement about, you know, who they are. I think it's fabulous to see it happening. Because you're right, it's no different. You know, I'm really proud of my Italian background. You know, we always brag and blah, 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 you know. Mm-hmm. So it's like that's an important, it is important. And people need to recognize that.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, okay. So let's talk a little bit about experiences that you've had where that welcoming hasn't been there. And the reason I ask that, I know it's not easy, and we don't have to talk about it, but I think people just write off the harm they cause.
Yeah.
In ignorance. You know, sometimes it's intentional, but sometimes it's just, you know, you don't realize.
Yeah. I think a lot of times it's not intentional, but that doesn't mean it's any less harmful, doesn't feel less hurtful. I would say a lot of it is in the educational system. It was for me. So living in Texas, my brother and I were the only Native American students in that school. And we were very tokenized. One of my teachers actually called me her little squaw, forgive my word, because it was not known to be offensive.
Correct.
I didn't even know it was offensive.
Right.
But that's all there was. That was it. You know, we didn't learn anything about Native people. And it's just starting to see a turn in some classrooms that I visit where I see Native people reflected in pictures, in the curriculum, anywhere at all. You know, and it's taken for so long, and it's still not even done to have these mascots gone.
Right.
So many people just misunderstand why it's harmful, even though there have been quantitative studies showing that it's harmful for Native students. People just think, well, we're trying to honor you, and it's not. Other places where it's not welcome, I'm not welcome, is in medical facilities.
Wait. This is a new one on me. What do you mean? What do you mean by that?
Well, again, it's a matter of, you know, there's no reflection of my own people. Anybody that looks like me, when you're in a medical facility, and I started studying intergenerational trauma a couple decades ago and started to understand that there has been a physiological effect. And medical professionals haven't been taught that. They don't know that there are actually differences physiologically amongst most people of color because of what has happened in the past. You know, they don't comprehend, you know, some of the different environments that we may be in that impacts our lifestyle that may not really mesh with what they are advising for us. There's just so much that isn't known. And, you know, I've actually had the opportunity to speak to medical students at the request of one of their instructors, because they knew pretty much nothing, and just letting them know some of the cultural aspects that may be different. Even things like spiritual connections for people who are in the hospital. A lot of different Native groups use sage and cedar and sweetgrass, but we burn it. And, well, of course, you can't have anything burning in a hospital, you know, but that's very important, or even knowing how to access someone who would be able to come in and do that for a family, particularly, you know, if a family is somewhere that's far from their community, you know, especially when we get out to, you know, more of the rural areas, and someone might have traveled 2 hours just to get to a medical facility. They don't know who might be local, if there's anyone local who can come in and do those things for them. And then they have to go through the whole process of, you know, getting it approved that they can do these things, whether they're doing medicine for the person or just providing comfort for that person with some of the cultural aspects that we have as individual tribes.
Well, thank you for that, and we can definitely delve into that more. It's just something that I've never really considered, at least not in the full way that you've explained it. I want to let everybody know, if you're listening, just tuning in, this is Conversations, WDRT show, where you get to meet people, you know, and learn about them. And our guest today, I'm Dina Eccles, and our guest is Tracy Littlejohn. She's a Ho-Chunk native and very active in maintaining the culture of being Ho-Chunk. And we're having quite a nice conversation. Thank you so much. So we just covered that, we talked about the trauma.
Yeah.
I think that would be good to cover a little bit more.
Okay. This is kind of one of my, it's not a great subject to talk about, but it's important.
It is. And people need to hear.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, going back to contact, with whether it's the French or the English or the Spanish, when we talk about the Americas, you know, and the interactions were usually not very pleasant. And then we get to the points where we're talking about, you know, the wars. And then we look at, you know, the removals, the reservations, the boarding schools, the adoption era, child welfare. Those are all traumatic experiences, and they have learned that when you have a population of people experiencing this trauma, what your body retains from that can be passed on to your children. And it manifests in different ways, and it continues to be passed on. Originally, these studies, or the theory and studies, was focused on Holocaust survivors from World War II. And people were like, well, we've had some traumatic experiences, and started looking more into these traumas in American Indians or indigenous people. for me personally, I think the most impactful experience that has created this trauma were the Indian boarding schools, or residential schools as they're known in Canada. You know, despite, you know, what happened in the, you know, wars and the removals, we weren't being told that who we are was wrong. We were just fighting for our survival and our right to our land. The boarding schools were a completely different issue. And I really do think it's had the greatest harm to Indigenous people in the Americas and all over the world. A lot of Indigenous people have experienced some sort of this type of school or education system by their colonizing country.
I think you're very kind to call it education, because I think it's erasure. There's no question about it. It was an attempt. What couldn't be done through war and violence was then attempted to do through forced assimilation and laws. I know that people could not practice their religion or their, what if you call it a religion, or practice their way of life.
When I was born, it was illegal.
Right.
We didn't get that right until 1978.
I hope people are thinking from their own lives. I think it was a really good thing that you talked early on about how, you know, being Ho-Chunk is like being an ethnic person of any type. Because I know everybody's very proud. You know, here we are, I drive through Westby, and the Norwegians are very proud, and everybody's very proud. Mm-hmm. And if you came to them and said, forget about it, you can't do your sewing, you can't make those things, you can't cook the way you wanted to cook, you know. If that kind of stuff was happening, if they understood it that way, then they could maybe have more compassion, more empathy.
I think so.
You know? Because this rising tide of, I don't know how it's impacting you, but I know in our community, the anti-CRT, critical race theory.
Yes.
I mean, it's such a fabricated thing. It's like they're pushing completely against everything that you've been talking about in terms of widening the circle and, you know, bringing more education of diversity into our schools. They're completely pushing, not only are they pushing against it, they're rewriting history.
Exactly. And what they don't realize is they're going to erase their own history if they keep it up.
Right. And that's why I was thinking about this conversation with you, and I'd written some notes down. You know, we all carry legacies of the histories of our people.
Yeah.
Some of us, like you, you're trying to remember. And then there are people who are trying desperately to forget, because maybe they know, or they don't even necessarily know what part their ancestors played in the violence, you know.
Yeah.
But we need to have reckoning. We need to understand, because what you're talking about here today is critical, which is why I was so thrilled that you weren't going to talk, because I knew I could ask you these questions and you wouldn't be like, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to go there. And no, it takes a lot of courage.
It can be very exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
But my dedication, it's the love for my children and my grandkids that I'm willing to do this, and it just for my family. Mm. It needs to happen, and I am happy to share the knowledge that I have and the experience that I have. You know, I'm no expert, but what I do know needs to be shared for better understanding.
Well, you may call yourself not an expert, and that's fine, because I'm not a big fan of experts anyway, but you clearly have lived it. You clearly have taken the time to understand it. And thank you for saying it. It's your love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, it's my love of humanity, you know, my love of being whole and healing. You know, we all need to heal from these things. We all need to. And if you don't acknowledge it, if you don't say, yes, this is what happened, if you just keep trying to pretend like it didn't happen, you know, I don't think that's wise.
I don't think
that's wise. All right. Well, I'm sure we'll get back around to this again. But so what do you hope for? And, you know, the word allies is not a word I particularly like. You know, it sort of comes from war anyway. But still, you know, it has its play. So what do you hope for in allies and in human beings, you know, in general? What are your hopes from that love that you have?
Compassion and love, ultimately. The ability to let us heal. Like, everybody needs healing. But, you know, a lot of it comes back to education. For Indigenous children who don't get the chance to learn about who they are, especially if they're removed from their home community for whatever reason in history that might have been, or from their parents' decision to move, whatever that may be, if you don't learn these things, you can't start to heal. So many Indigenous people don't know much about the boarding schools. I think there's more attention to it now over the last couple of years because of what's been found up in Canada with the children's graves at the residential schools. But when you don't know the harm that's been done, you can't understand the trauma. You know, a lot of Native Americans live in poverty. We have high suicide rates. We have addiction problems. We have self-esteem problems. But what a lot don't know is it does stem back to the boarding schools, the relocation, the adoption era. And we can't start to heal until we understand the root system that has created that ill.
I totally agree with you.
So what, you know, I feel is that it is owed to us that we are given the resources and the ability to learn ourselves what has happened and find our own way of healing. You know, Canada has the Truth and Reconciliation. I don't know that there can be any reconciliation for what was done in the boarding school. I don't see how that can possibly happen because they not only took our languages and our culture, they took the lives of our children. Mm-hmm. But to give us the ability to heal ourselves without any kind of discriminatory practices that would, you know, derail that, without the expectation of these Western ideals of quantifying things.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We need to be able to do it in our own holistic cultural way.
Right. Right. I totally agree. Totally makes sense to me. And I hope people are listening and taking this in and maybe willing to learn more, you know, take time to learn more about your neighbors.
Yeah.
And to honor the fact that they've been here and what we still can learn. And at the Indigenous Day, there was a elder there who was standing with his agricultural stand. Yeah. And we talked, you know, because we're farmers, we love it. We grow a lot of Indigenous corn and squash. We try to save seeds and that. And he was so sweet talking about, you know, and that preciousness and of the food and maintaining it.
Yeah.
And we need that. I mean, that's a very basic thing.
It is. And that's the thing, you know, before colonialism, the land provided everything we needed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I myself, you know, I try to say I'm acculturated rather than assimilated.
Okay.
But I'm still eating pretty much what's coming from the grocery store.
Yeah.
Because food sovereignty is tough when you live in an urban environment.
Mm-hmm.
But it is so important for us to be able to to keep growing all of these natural foods and medicines that we had before. I think our bodies need that, our spirits need that, and it's our, you know, we need to respect what Earth has always been able to provide to everyone, you know, before the industrial age, before all of these different things that, in my opinion, have kind of deteriorated the human race. We all live that way. John Trudell was a Native American activist who, he's kind of one of my heroes.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, and he said, everybody comes from a tribe.
That's right.
Some are just further removed from it than others. Everybody came from a tribe at one time. Everybody used what we had that the earth gave us to build our shelters, to clothe ourselves, to feed us, to heal ourselves. We need to remember what the earth provided to us rather than just use the land for what you can profit from.
Yeah, and I'm going to take that one just a little bit further and tell people there's a great video that is of his words, and he's talking, it's 11 minutes, I think, and it says, whatever happened to the tribes of Europe?
Right.
And I think it's a really important listen for people who have descendants of the people from Europe, to understand what happened, because we perpetuate. You know, like those of us who did come from Europe, you know, during the witch hunts and the different things that occurred, we were either the survivors or the perpetrators or something. And if you were the survivor, you learned to keep your mouth shut. You know, you learned, you protected yourself somehow.
Yeah.
And so that harm, you know, as he said very wisely in John Trudell, he said, it's a virus. It's a virus. It's a human virus, and it's not gone. And we all need to look at it. So thanks for bringing that up and bringing up John. So again, letting our listeners know, you were listening to WDRT's Conversations this morning. My name is Dina Eccles, and my guest is the really wonderful Tracy Littlejohn, Ho-Chunk, and... just all around excellent, an expert human being. Human being. Why
not? I like
not?
To facilitate thought and practice.
Yeah, there you go. Get people thinking. It's important. Yeah. It's important. So I know your current work, you are a consultant for racial justice trainings for the YWCA?
Yes, in La Crosse.
Let's talk about that.
Oh.
We could talk all day, couldn't we?
Oh, yes, definitely. Well, this actually came out of a study group for La Crosse County. We were looking at the disparities in contact between law enforcement and youth of color. And we were coming up with, how do we address this? And one of the things was, we need some kind of training. And someone had gone through the racial justice training out of the Madison YWCA, and I had been to parts of their trainings. And so we decided, you know what, this might be the answer. Well, not the answer, but a part of how we can address this problem.
Yeah.
So myself and some other peers, we attended the training to become facilitators. We came back to La Crosse, and we were doing that for a while, particularly for providers that had contact with youth and the justice system. But since then, we have moved beyond just that, where we open it to anybody, and we've been working with county employees, city employees, other nonprofit organizations, and even just the public in general to be able to come to these trainings. And it's long. It's a total of 24 hours. And I think some people expect that, you know, I'm going to finish this program and I'm going to know exactly what to do and I'm going to help end racism. But those 24 hours just lets us talk about, yeah, a wide variety of topics that are integral in racism, but it's just an intro.
Mm-hmm.
It's still just an intro. But knowing that I am able to, with a partner, get those conversations going amongst these people who all have contact with my own people and other people of color, it gives me a little hope that there are going to be changes made. And those who live in our area are hopefully going to feel like they're actually welcome in a space, that they're being listened to, that they see themselves reflected, and that they can feel like they are a part of the community rather than just a minority group.
Or a target group.
Yep.
When you're talking about justice, I know I had Janice Turbin, who's running for sheriff here.
She was
a person I had on, and she works in the inside, and she talked about this a lot. It was actually great to hear her, and I think there's a real hunger there, among some people. There's a real hunger to understand more and to break down the racial overtones,
yeah,
you know, that have haunted us, really. They just have haunted us. And I just, it's always that feeling like you do what has been done to you, you know?
Yeah. It's hard to break that, that feeling of, revulsion.
Mm.
You know, people don't like racism, but I'd rather not talk about it, kind of the thing that happens. And one of my favorite parts of the training is actually talking about the history, the policies, the procedures, protocols of the United States government, and even prior to that, that have created this problem of racism in the United States. That's one of my favorites, because it's like people think it's more of a, this is how people are raised. They're raised to think that way. No, it's a system.
It's a system, yeah.
The United States has set it up to be like this.
Mm-hmm. Right. I always tell people that, the first peoples who were brought in here to work were indentured servants for 7 years, and they were whites and blacks.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, they intermarried. Everything was cool. And then it was an economic step that said, we need to have permanent slaves.
Yeah.
We need to do this. And so they, picked black people.
Yeah.
So the whites remained free. And that's why we have free men of color, because there were some people before that turn.
Right.
Who, and a lot of people don't know this. They don't know this history. There are round buildings built, barns built here, and they were built by free men of color. And I'm very happy to talk about that with people, because people don't have a clue. And then the law, they made it a law that blacks and whites couldn't marry.
Mm-hmm.
That was a law. And it was in the 1600s. So before then, it was no law, and everybody was happy, fine, la, la, la.
Yeah.
So now it's. I agree with you, it's a system. And we're steeped in these systems and these laws, and they need to be challenged.
They do. And the people whose ancestors or them personally benefit from this are going to be the hardest to convince that it needs to change, because the individualistic worldview that people have is, no, it's what's mine is mine. I earned it.
Yeah.
I'm not letting it go.
Right.
And not seeing that's damaging not only other people but themselves as well. It's keeping them from really being a part of society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a concept in the early 1900s. It was called the divine right of kings. And I always think back on this because I grew up in around Pittsburgh, and that's where Andrew Mellon, Andrew Carnegie, and Mellon, started their empires. Mm-hmm. But the way they did it was they brought in people from Europe. And they very intentionally, because I grew up there, so I can tell you this, they very intentionally put people together who could not speak the same language in the hopes that there would not be able to unionize.
Oh, wow.
You know, it was very intentional. Oh, yeah, the history. And the thing is, I grew up there in Little Italy and never was taught the history until I went away.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like the Pinkertons, they were the armed militia, you know, who kept the strikers at bay. All these things happened right there, but we didn't learn about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, that's not that different than Rosewood in Tulsa.
Right. Right.
They learn about it in other countries. Nobody learns about it here in our K through 12 public school system.
Well, they are listening. If they're listening now, they're hearing about it, and maybe
Look up Rosewood in Tulsa for our listeners.
Yeah, yeah. Google. Google can be your friend today. Right. So the hope is that people can learn. The compassion can outweigh the ignorance of hatred, because, you know, I don't think it's natural for human beings to be so full of hate.
No, it's not. It's not.
So the familial ties that you have and the ties to the land, and let's... You know, also not forget to talk about your being grandma, because that's part of it. I know that's part of it. You mentioned it when I asked you for a bio, you mentioned it, and I was like, yeah, we're going to talk about that.
Well, my biological son had his first child a year and a half ago, and I am very involved in her life. I never realized you could love someone more than your own children.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the kinship system of the Ho-Chunk, I do have other grandchildren. But I'm in almost like, it's not quite the same role as being biological grandma.
Mm-hmm.
I do adore those grandchildren so very much. I love them. But knowing that I'm going to have a little bit more of a role in her upbringing and wanting to do right by her really drives me even more than I did before. Mm. I want to spend time with her as much as I can without sacrificing my own personal life. But it's just, you know, it's amazing to have this little person who looks up to you, and knowing that how I behave and how I treat people and what I can teach her is going to have such an effect on who she is as she grows up. And all I can hope for is that, you know, she is a loving person who knows who she is.
I think with you as grandma, she is well on her way.
Oh, I hope so.
There was a time when I was learning from a Mapuche woman and also at the same time a Navajo woman.
Uh-huh.
And both of them talked about the grandmother holding the hand of the child.
Mm-hmm.
And that just in the holding of the hand, so much is passed.
Yeah.
You know, I remember that too. I have that. I think that's why I made the return to the land, much against my mother and family, their will. You know, it was like, why are you doing it? You're going backwards. You should be making your fortune, you know, in the city and da-da-da-da-da. You know?
Yeah.
And it was like, no, I need to do this. I need to do this.
Yeah. Happiness does not lie in materialism. Happiness comes from things that are natural, and grandparents are such important people. You know, I wish I had had more time with my grandparents for so many different reasons. you know, I think it's one of the most important roles there can be.
Right. And that's another thing of, I know the role that my mother played with her. I don't have children, but my sister had two, and now she's a grandmother. And my mom, who's no longer with us, but, you know, when you said that, how could you love more than you love your own children, I could see that in her. You know, I could see that in her, and it was really precious. It's like you get a new life again, another opportunity again. It's great. It's a wonderful thing, and it's hard to watch the disrespect. I think that was another thing that I miss in our culture, is the disrespect to elders.
Yeah,
it's really painful. As I age, it's more painful, you know. It's like, really?
Well, you know, the things that they've gone through, the things that they've seen, the knowledge that they have, and then, you know, I swore to my parents they would never be in a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
They belong home with their family, and I'm so grateful that the circumstances with their illnesses and passing, I did not have to do that.
Yeah.
It almost feels some days that people feel like, well, I'm all grown up, that they're disposable.
Yeah.
Your parents can never be disposable.
It's a whole different way of seeing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole different way. Again, Standing Rock, that was another thing that really touched me, was, you know, the way, like at one point we were going to be standing, you know, kind of in a situation where the police would be there and things were happening, and a young person came up to me and called me auntie, and, you know, with so much respect, and wanted to make sure that I was going to be safe, and wrote the number who to call if I was arrested on my arm. It was so sweet, you know, just the kind of care.
I think
we have a lot to relearn. Unlearn. It's tragic, really.
I totally agree.
Yeah. So I'm so proud of, I can't say I'm proud of you, but I am. I'm, as a human being, I'm really grateful to the work that you do and what you've taken on. I know it's not easy, but it's definitely rewarding.
It's reciprocated, Dina.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. So anything, any other things that we've missed that you really want to say to people?
Wow. that's a lot.
Yeah, okay, go for it. We got time.
I think for me, it's the misperception when we go back to the racialization of Native people. And this, you know, this is an important thing that I think they need to be teaching in schools, and adults who don't get this chance in school. But the reason that those European countries had these treaties, and then later the United States had these treaties, you can only do a treaty with another nation. So they recognize that the ancestors that we had, the way that their systems of society were set up, was another nation. And we've gotten to this point now where we've been racialized, and our sovereignty is now in danger because of some things that have been happening at the Supreme Court level. And I think it's important for people to realize that, you know, we are our own governmental entity, despite how that came to be recognized by the United States Congress. We were sovereign before colonization. We are still sovereign now. And that needs to be recognized, and we need to be able to, as the United States, work with tribal governments in the same manner that they work with any other nation. We have our own, you know, economies. We have our own judicial systems, our own lawmaking. You know, it's all the same, even though it may be formatted different.
Yes.
We are not a race of people. We are our own nations with our own histories and our own cultures, our own beliefs. And the fact that they may be risking that sovereignty through another nation's court system is really scary. It could be a major shift in tribal government if this upcoming court case, the hearings start in November, it could be devastating, really. And a lot of it goes back to having access to our resources, which has always been the motive for colonization.
Right. Economic.
Yes.
Yes. Well, this is a very important thing that people should be paying attention to.
Yeah.
And there's a lot now that's being done that we're going to have to continue to work for. I mean, if you told me we'd be working this hard at this point in my life, I'd be like, no way, no way.
I know. I thought I'd be more relaxed now, have more time, and I feel like I'm busier now than I was, you know, just raising my child and working.
Well, that's why I invited you on the show, because I knew we could have an honest conversation and unearth some of the things that people have tried desperately to cover up.
Right.
And we don't need that anymore. We need to shine a light on the reality.
Yeah.
Because it's big.
And, you know, like I said before, boarding schools have really done a number. You know, we look at murdered and missing Indigenous women. That is a tragedy in North America. And we look at our addiction issues, you know, it feels like everything we're dealing with kind of goes back to those boarding schools and that forced assimilation. Mm-hmm. And just trying to help people understand, but there's so much to it. You know, I don't even know every aspect of it.
Well, luckily we have time. We can still learn. We can still learn, you know, and not be afraid. And
exactly.
We have to wrap this up now, but like I said, we could have talked all day, and maybe we'll get time to do that once. Sit down and have a cup of tea. And
but that would be nice.
Yeah, thank you so much, Tracy. You have a wonderful day, and thanks to all the listeners, and keep learning out there.
Thanks, Dina.
Thank you.